2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hello, and welcome to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson.
Hello.
And today we're speaking with Troy Williams. He's the Executive Director of Equality Utah. And Marina Gomberg, she's a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. And we're going to discuss LGBTQ issues. And I hope I do that right again later on, because I have getting all those letters out.
In the right order.
And I still missed a few, because there's others going on.
That's actually the purpose of the podcast, right? Is to say, if you don't get them in the right order, or you forget one,
I'm going to call you out.
You are not going to get into
And I should know better by now, Troy.
No, but part of it was Marina wrote an amazing column in the Salt Lake Tribune, and we'll link to it in our show notes. But basically, it was Taylor Swift's new music video.
You got to calm down.
Which is amazing. Yeah. It's so awesome, right?
It is good. It's catchy. I'll give you that.
It's a great song, and it's basically, a song of support. I saw it as like, hey, calm down about stuff that doesn't concern you. None of your anxiety about stuff that doesn't have anything to do with you is going to hurt, is going to help or change the situation.
Right.
And exactly. In doing that, she had some great assists, I thought, the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to have you guys on was to talk about this idea of being an ally. Mm-hmm. And I think I feel this sometimes on our racial discussions, mm-hmm, as well. You want to be an ally to people who have felt disenfranchised or who have been marginalized in some way. I think sometimes men feel this way to women in a professional setting. Mm-hmm. But you don't know how.
Right.
And you're just worried. I just had a conversation with a gentleman yesterday about how do I help the women in my office without being that creepy guy. Right.
Right.
So that's where you have to have some ability to forgive people for getting it wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Like the letter.
Look, sometimes I make mistakes. You know, I like to believe people recognize that I'm trying, and you know, you fall short sometimes, right? It's like I have a friend of mine who she's French, but if you go to a foreign country and you don't speak their language, they appreciate you trying.
Right.
You're going to butcher it.
Right.
But when you don't give any effort is when you feel as though people are feel disrespected.
Right.
And so in this way, I mean, you know, as I've gotten older and you get to a certain age, you realize we all just have to accept people for who they are, mm-hmm, not who we want them to be,
right,
whatever notion we think they should follow. And the more we can do that, the more we become allies to each other. Again, humanity.
Yeah.
It's all about humanity.
So, Marina, what prompted you to write that?
You know, I was interested to my colleague showed me the music video and I just loved it. And then I was interested to see this critique popping up all over, and ended up finding a USA Today article that really kind of chronicled all these different things. Everything from that, you know, she was using this movement as a fashion statement, which I actually think is sort of honoring the movement, but also, you know, to things that she was over stereotyping homophobes as being uneducated hillbillies, and I thought, you know, she's invested to get at the amount of talent that she got into that music video and the production
Ellen's
quality,
in it, RuPaul.
And, the Fab Five. I mean, it's got a lot of people and a lot of inclusion and a lot of color, and I thought, you know, if we continue to critique and only allow for perfection, I think that we sort of inhibit our own movement in that way. And we keep people who are, like I said in my column, equality, for better or worse, has a price tag. And Taylor Swift is helping pick up the check. And I would hate for her to feel like her help wasn't valuable because it wasn't perfect. I'm actually not saying that it wasn't perfect, but even if people think that it is, not to feel appreciative seemed like the wrong way to go about it to me. And I see that in a lot of different places. And this was sort of the moment where I thought, I'm going to latch onto it.
What did you think, Troy, when you saw it?
I loved it. I was so overjoyed. I love allies, and I know that every social movement requires allies. There's not enough of us, right, to actually move legislation forward or to change laws. And so if we don't bring people on into this movement with us, we're not going to get anywhere. And that's the same for the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the LGBT movement, environmental movement. We all need to be working together. And if we're going to start this purity policing of folks, you know, and really calling them out or shaming them for getting things wrong, I think we're really setting ourselves back.
So one thing I think is I loved your column because I do think there is too much, like you say, there's some standard that you have to meet before you can engage in the discussion. And if you don't know, you should be asking questions. But I also think I've felt this especially acute in the racial discussions, mm-hmm. a responsibility to educate yourself to some degree.
Yeah.
Now, it's not Jason's responsibility every time I have a question about Black culture to go to him and say, hey, what do you guys think about this? What about that? And sometimes we argue.
Right. That's not what we're supposed to be talking about.
Yeah. Should you talk to that kid on the train? Or, you know, is it appropriate to use the N-word in any situation, right? So, but I feel like at least doing a little bit of homework before you come and ask someone is a really good thing. I think the danger in the standard like that you addressed in your column is that people who don't know anybody from the LGBT community and they do have questions. Like I was writing a column about transgender issues and I aesthetically wanted to do something that I have been told by a transgender person was not, they didn't want to be identified that way. It was born male or female, right? Mm-hmm. They said, you know, that there's a different way to phrase it.
Right.
We discussed it. But aesthetically, and I'm writing a story, and that's what matters to a writer,
right.
how it sounds. I thought, is it really that important? Like, why is it that important? I don't know. So I had to reach out to some people that I knew in the transgender community mm-hmm. and ask them. When it was explained to me, I respected that way they wanted to be labeled, right?
That's the same with, you know, anybody. You know, I think look at this recent change. You know, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has, from the top down, has requested that folks respect, but by not using the term Mormon as much. I grew up Mormon, so that was bizarre for me.
Same.
But, you know, and so I've been trying, you know, I've asked the Latter-day Saint community to, you know, make a lot of concessions on LGBT issues and to respect where we're coming from. Mm-hmm. So I try really hard. I still mess up occasionally, but I'm trying really hard to respect that and to call folks by their proper name, the Latter-day Saint Church, you know. So I'm trying to do that. And so I think that's just the respect that we show one another.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's something to be said for effort and intention, and not that any marginalized person needs to, like you said, be responsible for educating everybody else around them all the time. To the degree that we have the energy to, I really try to engage in that, at least in my daily life, and to live sort of out in a way that people feel comfortable asking me questions, even if they don't know how to word them correctly. So I think that as we look at ways of communicating with each other, when we want to be understood, I think it helps that we start with understanding.
We're going to continue our discussion speaking about LGBTQ plus issues, and hopefully again we all find our humanity so that we can bring out the best in each other and realize that we're all in this journey together, and we're supposed to help each other as best we can. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We're back with Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with my co-host and partner, Amy Donaldson. Oops, I'm sorry. Partner in business, because I'm sure Edward Kay would hear that and think to himself, did something happen that
business
I didn't know
partner.
About?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
is correct.
Although
yes.
the days he might say, you can have her. So,
I'm sure he would never say that. Troy Williams, the Executive Director of Equality Utah, is here with us, along with Salt Lake Tribune columnist Marina Gomberg. And Troy, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about, and you mentioned that we talk about allies, right?
Yeah.
And in our state legislature, in one of the most conservative states in the United States, you found some pretty reliable allies.
Absolutely. So if you look at the at the makeup of the legislature. I think it's like 80-some percent Republican and probably 90% Latter-day Saints. But what's really cool about Utah that is different from other conservative states across the country is that over the past, 5 years now, we have placed 4 pieces of LGBTQ-inclusive legislation on Governor Herbert's desk, and he's signed them. And all of those bills have been sponsored by Republicans. So Senator Steve Urquhart, former Senator Steve Urquhart mm-hmm. from St. George, was the first person to sponsor our non-discrimination law. That actually, we worked very closely with the Church mm-hmm. of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to get that through in 2015. And it was so, you know, it was a big deal for at that point for a Republican to step forward and say, I want to work to advance LGBTQ equality. Since then, Senator Dan Thatcher and Lee Perry, Representative Lee Perry, have worked on our hate crimes bill this year. We're also working to end the harmful practice of conversion therapy mm-hmm. with Senator Dan McKay and Representative Craig Hall. And it's been such a wonderful journey watching all of them move through these issues. President Adams has also been such a tremendous help to us. And they all start out, I think, a little bit cautious. You know, what order do I put LGBT mm-hmm. together when I'm talking? I'm afraid to say something wrong or to use a wrong pronoun. How do I do this? But then as the process works, I've seen it with every single one of these lawmakers, I see the light bulb go on off in their heads and they go, oh, wait a minute. This is about these people becoming full citizens of the state of Utah and of the country, you know, and these are just people who want to pursue life, liberty, you know, and that dream of happiness. Right. And so when that light bulb goes on, they become these great sort of champions and allies for our community. It's been so inspiring to watch it. And then for Governor Herbert and watching his Absolutely. Evolution on these things, too, he's signed all of these bills. And it's exciting.
Well, and I will say my husband is a lawyer, and he said Governor Herbert's actually appointed more women and people of color to the bench than in his 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
It's been amazing to see what he's done. And so I think there is some value in your approach, because I've watched from the sidelines uh-huh. and I've watched lots of people do it in my 30 years as a journalist. Uh-huh. And sometimes the approach has been, we're not compromising. You're going to accept us yeah. the way we yeah. are. And what you've done is say, I know we're not going in there and I'm not getting everything I want today. Right. And I'm going to not get anything I want.
Right.
But they're going to know a gay person by the time I'm right. done with this, right? Right. They're going to feel comfortable talking to one gay person. And yeah. that might be the only gay person that they've met. And it's not just the legislature. I think you could probably go into a lot of communities and say, you know, do you want to talk about something? I mean, I mentioned the transgender conversation. I actually mentioned it to a friend of mine up at the U, and they said, would you want us to put together a round table where journalists could come? And I didn't know who else, because maybe you don't cover these issues all the time. Maybe they come in now and then. And there were actually 8 reporters and several from the Tribune who came and said, you know, we don't know. Like, tell us why this is important. Tell us why this matters, right?
Right. And the AP just allowed, you know, they, them to be used as pronouns in stories. And I still see my colleagues at the Tribune using those and sort of helping communicate why they're using those and that they are using them in this way. And I think it's just
the
that education.
Press, for people who are not listening.
AP.
Right. Yeah.
They tell all, they are the standard by which we write our
right.
Our,
yeah.
If anything, AP says it, we do it.
That's right.
Yep.
They're the grammar police.
Right. It's true. And I remember before in a past life when I worked for the Utah Pride Center, going out and especially during Prop 8, when Prop 8 was happening in California, which was the legal battle over marriage, but Utah was really involved here. We were going out and proactively training the media on how to report fairly, accurately, and inclusively, letting them know that words like homosexuality and homosexual were sort of out, that was how it was talked about when it was listed in the DSM-4 or whatever as a mental illness, and it is not anymore, and so we've evolved. And then it was GLBT, and it's LGBTQ plus AI. And so yeah. it has changed over time, and I think it's important for us to be out in front of that to say, this is how we would like to be, this is how we talk about ourselves. Please join us in that. And mm-hmm. I think that Troy's right, that we owe it to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to model that behavior back and to say, we're going to call you mm-hmm. by your chosen name, and we hope that you'll do the same with us.
Yeah. And I think it's not just a matter of like using the right terms for the sake of using the right terms, right? Like, so we're not just trying to, it matters because kids hear, one of the things that I'll tell you as a parent of a kid who grew up in this environment here in Utah, You can speak to it because you grew up here too, as well, right? Are you
from I grew up a Latter-day Saint in Oregon.
Okay, so yeah. Outside. But my kid grew up here as a non-LDS kid, but my daughter's lesbian, and the thing that bothered me was that the pain that she felt and the shame about who she was came from outside of our home, right? So you think if you're a parent, you can teach your kid to be confident and loving and love themselves. And then what happens is the world sends them all these messages that you didn't know they were getting.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why the language matters.
Do you know,
so
this
much.
Is the thing. Like when I grew up in Oregon, it wasn't that I was – I mean if I would have come out gay when I was in Oregon, it would have been like cool. But it was coming out as Latter-day Saint then, right?
Interesting.
Wow. Right? You know, because they the Mormons are weird and they got the horns and with the plural wives and horns. And so
yeah. –
Right. Oh,
yeah.
You
never heard that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, and so I was always kind of in the closet, you know, as a Mormon then, right?
It's a big closet you guys have.
It was a huge closet.
A lot of identities.
But I had lots of wardrobe options. but yeah, that was the thing, you know, all those negative messages. And so it depends. Everyone knows what it's like to be a minority. It just depends where you are,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you have to accept those circumstances as learning opportunities for yourself and for the people, hopefully, that you're engaging with.
Yep.
And if they are, in what we're talking about, if they are people who are willing to then be engaged and try to be reciprocating in their understanding, then we all grow from that, right?
Yeah.
We're all a little better from that. Yeah. And one last thing about Gary Herbert. You know, I'm a pretty liberal guy myself, but he and Olene Walker, when she was alive, they are two of the most reasonable, kind of thoughtful people. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that comes from age and some wisdom, so I'm not calling them old, but, you know, when you get older, you reflect on your life and circumstances that have happened. And if you're smart, you allow that to become wisdom.
Yeah.
And I think he's done a very good job of that. I guess that's all I'm saying with that. Yeah. We're going to continue with our discussion with Troy Williams and with Marina Gomberg right after this. This is Voices of Reason. We are back with Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And today we're speaking with Troy Williams. He is the Executive Director of Equality Utah here in Salt Lake. And Marina Gomberg, she's a columnist for The Rival.
Salt Lake Tribune.
Yeah. So it's like the Hatfields and the McCoys in this room. If we can do it, anybody can.
And we're all getting along.
We're all getting along. That's right. So Amy was asking to kind of relate some experience in that, you know, how do parents kind of handle the situation of finding out that they have...
Or even if you don't know. Like, say you're just a parent, you just don't know what your
kid...
Because for me, I really took the approach of, I'm going to see what my kids become, right? And I joked, Rachel was watching the Miss America pageant when she was like 3 years old, and she's like, Mom, these ladies are so beautiful, I'm going to marry these ladies, you know? But also, I didn't...
At three years old, she said that?
Yeah. So I just thought... I thought it was funny. I told the story to a few people. And a few people did mention something about, oh, maybe she's going to be a lesbian. But but I didn't. I'm like, she's three. She didn't, you know. And so, but maybe she did. I don't know. So I just know that for me, it was the default. So everything I felt and went through, all my friends, most of my friends were, I won't say all because I did have some gay friends. But most of them were. And it was the default. So everything I heard in society related to me. Everything I watched on TV was my life. That was not the case with my daughter, and she got a lot of messages that were really derogatory and really made her feel bad about herself. And I just wondered if you guys had some advice for straight parents, if they do or don't know, like, is there anything you can do to kind of make that,
you know, well, the thing that I compare it to is growing up Jewish in Utah was interesting because I was already very different. And my parents taught me to appreciate that difference. And that was actually a really helpful tool growing up. So they would come into my elementary schools during the holiday season and teach my class how to play dreidel and what the story of Hanukkah is. And you know, would hug me when somebody called me a dirty Jew and say, you know, these are the contributions that Jewish people have made to society, and we are among a beautiful people with a beautiful history. And that ended up being really helpful later in life when I realized that I was not dead inside, that I was just attracted to women and I had been looking for love in all the wrong places, that I could that difference was beautiful, and I knew a bit how to handle that. They also were really interesting, and so they didn't raise me knowing that I was a lesbian, but they had friends who were some of their really close friends is a lesbian couple. And so I got to see those examples of myself. I got to see that, and they would celebrate gay culture. They would celebrate people of different religions and people of color and of different cultures and stuff. So I got to understand that our house was a certain way, and that other people got to live a different way too. And so when that came to coming out, I knew that it was going to be okay. And in fact, I remember getting the phone call from my dad after I had told my sister that I was gay. It was like an hour later that that he called. And I thought, well, it'll be okay, right?
How old were you?
I was 19. And, but then I thought, will it be different because it's his own kid or whatever? And so I sort of trepidatiously answered the phone, and the first thing out of his mouth was, well, who's the lucky lady? So I knew it was going to be okay. And I didn't even end up having to tell him. But I think that just knowing that my difference was going to be embraced, because I saw them embracing so many different cultures, even outside of sexuality or gender orientation, I knew that that was going to be okay. And that I was going to be loved, not just despite my difference, but because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last month we had the big Love Loud concert with Imagine Dragons and all the different folks, Dan Reynolds. And I spoke, and when I came off the stage, a friend from my mission grabbed me, who I hadn't seen in like 30 years. And we were in the MTC together, and so we were together for the whole 2 years in England. And he was there because his 15-year-old son had come out, and he just wanted to talk to me, like, how do I do? Well, how do I navigate this thing? And I'm worried about his life, what's going to happen to him. And I'm like, you know what? He is going to make mistakes. He's going to have his heart broken. Mm-hmm. He's going to make choices that you don't like. But if you always love him, and he always knows that he has a home, he's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what parents need to know. You just gotta to love the kid. They gotta know that there's always a bed for them in the house,
mm-hmm. and love the person that they have become or
yes.
are becoming.
Yeah.
So I would say, I would add, because I did a lot of what your parents did. Like, that's the kind of house we had, and that's what's shocked me about Rachel having some self-loathing and some shame.
Yeah.
And I think that what that revealed to me is how pervasive homophobic.
Yeah.
material is in
Huge.
Our culture,
right?
So I think that, well, she's saturated in this really accepting environment. We stood in line with some friends when gay marriage was made legal on December 20th.
Mm-hmm.
We were up at 5 a.m. with our friends as witnesses to their
Beautiful.
Wedding. So she was with me. She's my only kid who came with me
nice.
at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
But and at the time, she had not said anything to me. These were just people we loved and cared about.
Yeah.
But I think that that also sends another message. It sends this message that I remember saying, like, I'm so angry about this. Why aren't you guys angry? They were, like, so happy and praying they got through the line before that we were all certain the judge was going to issue a stay.
Sure.
Yeah, a temporary restraining order and not perform anymore. We were just hoping to get through the line.
Yep.
That angered me because I know that I could go up and get a license and get married and I wouldn't have to do it on their time or on their schedule. So I think my pointing out these injustices also was maybe not
well,
you know,
I
it's wanna, both.
I want to give a cautionary tale to parents who are struggling with their child's sexual orientation or gender identity. When I came out, my parents refused to meet my boyfriend.
How old were you at the time?
I was like 29. And that forever damaged our relationship. And both of my parents passed away. My mom 10 years ago, my dad 2 years ago. And I didn't have a relationship with them. Because they refused to participate or want to have any curiosity around my life. And what a tremendous loss that is for all of us.
Yeah.
They lost out on that. I lost out on them being part of my life. So that's the risk for parents. When you want to come down with a hard line about with your child, you can lose them.
Mm-hmm.
And don't. Don't do it.
No, you don't want to. Yeah.
And I think, too, some self-compassion for parents who are caught in the middle of a storm that I can't even really imagine. That if you're institution of faith is telling you mm-hmm. a certain thing, and then to try and juxtapose that with love of your child, that has got to be extraordinarily weighty. Mm-hmm. And so self-care and self-compassion, it takes time to understand. Mm-hmm. I think that the point is, though, is to try to mm-hmm. want to understand, to be able to ask questions. And I think to bring that back to the Taylor Swift thing, it involves the rest of us welcoming the imperfection of their ignorance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And allowing that imperfection so that they can get to a place that is more perfect.
And I guess I would end this segment by saying that if you get tired of seeing gay characters and Taylor Swift videos with yeah. RuPaul and Ellen DeGeneres in them, every single time I see something like that, I am so grateful. Like,
yeah.
Beyond words grateful, because I know the message that's sending to a kid like mine
yeah.
who
yes.
is hearing is latching on all to the negative stuff that's
right.
out there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Watch your hand, because you just knocked off your mic just briefly. But we got out. I got it on. I just want to continue. I love having this kind of discussion because I feel like it's enlightening and it's enriching, and I hope people get that out of it. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We're back with Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And today we're speaking with Troy Williams. He's the executive director of Equality Utah, and Marina Gomberg. She's a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. And we're speaking about LGBTQ plus issues. And I want to kind of go straight to Marina in our last segment here. You know, we at this point, we all feel as though we're in a pretty good time in terms of people becoming more tolerant, more understanding.
Right.
But you still say you have a few concerns that...
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I look at the critique of Taylor Swift's video and I think, would we have been so critical if this was 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. And we were still fighting for, you know, in Utah, we could be fired or evicted for being gay or transgender. Would we, if we hadn't yet achieved marriage equality, would we be so critical of these allies? And I think that the critique now saying, well, that's not quite perfect, and you're, you know, is a sign that we've reached a place where many people's needs have largely been met, and that's really wonderful. However, I think it's a little bit dismissive of those for whom the fight is still so real. I think transgender Americans face some of the greatest threats to their safety and their legal citizenship being fully recognized, as do, I think, people who are going through conversion therapy and who are, you know, losing that understanding that they are a person of value. And for these people, that fight is so real and so immediate that I think I hope we can still find the sense of urgency in our movement to allow the imperfections of our allies when they're having, and I said this in the column, I don't know that mm-hmm. people who are fearing for their life care about perfect action. I think they probably care about powerful action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and loving action.
Because yeah.
I really mm-hmm. think that's that idea that I might not understand everything you're going through, but I care about you as a human being. And so you explain it to me and I'll fight with you,
yeah.
right? I'll help you. Because I see this.
Empathy. Yeah.
Yeah. And I see this on my Facebook stuff a lot, which Jason always gives me a hard time about engaging in lots of
Look, I give her credit for it. I'm not able to do it.
But I've had friends whose kids are, and it's mostly transgender parents who have children who are transgender, or in one case it was a kid who had committed suicide. Wow. Those parents are unable to watch me on Facebook engage in a pretty moderate discussion with people who spew some pretty hateful stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty good about saying you have to take that down, you know, that you yeah. can't insult people. I police my page pretty carefully,
yeah.
but I'm pretty open. It's lots of people I work with, lots of people I write about. So there's a lot of interaction with people that have really, really different views. And I have felt bad at times that maybe I should be more militant about it and say, like, you're a hateful, horrible person. But I follow
that
Troy's,
always works. That always
I follow
works,
Troy's
it?
Lead. Yeah. Like, you're my, yeah, I look to you on yeah. Twitter.
First of all, she's always the one telling me you got to fight hate with love. Because
yeah.
I'm always the guy ready to get right up in somebody's face.
Riled.
And some stuff.
You that
know?
Is, you know, I just think that shuts, whenever we sort of call someone a bigot or, you know, say that you're hateful. I mean, there are people who are bigots and racists. I mean, that's clear. And some of them operate very high offices in this country. When you do that, though, you shut down dialogue. You mm-hmm. shut down that ability. Most people are not racist, right? Mm-hmm. Most people are not hateful, but they more often than not, are operating from a place of fear. Mm-hmm. Fear of what they don't understand. Mm-hmm. And so how do we reduce that fear? And it's always through dialogue. It's always through mm-hmm. opening up our hearts to each other and working through some of those misunderstandings. But, man, if you label somebody, you're just going to shut all that down.
I also feel like if you do these discussions in public and you keep having them, like you do on Twitter, Troy,
yeah.
and you do with your columns, Marina, I feel like people are watching. Everybody doesn't take the time to hop on Facebook and have a fight, right? Everybody yeah. isn't on Twitter arguing over, you know,
right.
ridiculous pieces of legislation that can never pass or will pass.
Uh-huh.
So, but they watch, and that has yeah. an impact on them. And some of those people are my kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Lastly, let's hit conversion therapy.
Is it
ever going to be illegal in Utah?
Very soon. Governor Herbert has.
I can't believe we're actually even having this discussion.
I know. This is the effort to try to reduce or modify a person's same-sex attraction or their gender identity, and try to make a gay person straight or a transgender person cisgender. And it's a harmful practice. And we know from national studies that when young people are subjected to conversion therapies, their rates of depression double and their attempts at suicide triple. So we've sent that message loud and clear to the legislature, and Governor Herbert has heard it. He has tasked the Utah Licensing Board of Psychologists and under DOPPEL to actually draft regulations. So we're in the process now. We're going to see what they come up with probably next month, September and or August, September. And so I'm optimistic that with them taking the lead, we're moving this debate out of politics, and we're actually having licensed professionals take the lead, and I think we're going to see the practice end very soon.
So let me ask you, because that was one of the most maddening and depressing turn of events at the legislature this last session.
Right.
How do you kind of keep the faith, or I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I guess you don't have a choice.
No, I mean, I always have said that as an LGBT activist in Utah, that you have to be an irrational optimist, mm-hmm. right? You know the odds are stacked against you, but you keep pushing forward. And it took us 7 years until we got non-discrimination protections for our community. It took us 4 years to pass an LGBTQ inclusive hate crime statute, which we did this year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, introducing the first year of conversion therapy, I wasn't surprised that we didn't
maybe we
get,
got greedy.
We didn't get
I was
through.
Like, yes,
I'm very optimistic.
Will it be better to have it go through this process?
It will have the same efficacy as law. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think it will be great, and we'll see. You know, I mean, devil's in the details often. So we'll work through that, and but I think we'll have some answers and some clarity in this fall.
Marina, I'll give you the last word.
Well, I just am so glad that this is happening in our state, because I think about growing up and having visions of people who were esteemed and LGBT, and I still was one of those kids who wanted to not live, and I didn't have that message coming at me weekly from a therapist or somebody. So I think that's really important, and I'm glad that we're having these dialogues. So thanks so much for having us on today.
You know,
thanks for coming.
I would say thank you for coming, because, again, I love these discussions because it makes me feel good, first of all, but more importantly, I just feel like the more information we get out there, that's kind of what we want to do. We want to promote civil dialogue, but we also want to promote being informed and being educated,
yep.
and this is part of that discussion. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at vormed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at ADonSports and at JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VOR Podcast. Check out our Facebook page. You can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any other places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.